When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, this is Graham. Welcome to a classic big interview. Today, join me. We're going back to season 2015-2016. This is what I had to say about it back then.
From the very first time I went down to work in England full-time, probably the guy who was quickest to be warm, quickest to seek me out, was Harry Redknapp. It was a coincidence because I'd always admired him. I'd been a fan of Ted McDougall. Ted McDougall played at Bournemouth, so I started to follow Harry Redknapp, whose playing career I'd been too young to know about. But I gradually understood that he fascinated me because he'd played amongst the elite. He'd played in that West Ham side where Bobby Moore was still king, but there was class all around him. And he played in a West Ham side that was expected to be England's academy of elegance and football with brio and football with beauty. It was supposed to be like the beating heart of English football in the time when Harry was a winger there. That always caught my attention. And the contrast between how Harry had to forge a career at lower level football, particularly when he took over at Bournemouth, the difficulties of finding players, getting the budget right, and then knocking Manchester United out of the FA Cup, that captured my attention. And in my opinion, I'll argue firmly that Harry Redknapp is the type of person I want to see succeeding in football. His career is drawing towards the latter stages now, and I absolutely swear that when he's gone, we'll miss him badly. I will. I find him funny. I find him passionate about football. I love the way that he's been able to put a premium on flair and ability always. He's consistently, in his signings, gone for footballers. And we talk about them during these two episodes because it was so long that we split this interview into two. Initially, we touch on his beginnings, where he began to play football, why, what it was like, and some remarkable episodes in his early football player signing career. But then we go on to talk about Kanu, about Gareth Bale. De Canio obviously pops up. And I find this guy to be similar to me in terms of what value he places on ability, character, and even the bad boys in football. I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed sitting down and talking soccer with Harry Redknapp. See you on the other side. Harry, I've already said before we started taping this that I'm here because this series of interviews gives me the chance to speak to people that I admire. And what I've always wanted to come out of these podcasts is my love of football, and therefore speak to somebody who spent a life in football as a talented player, as a tremendous coach, as a man of achievement, as a director of football, as somebody who understands the game passionately. It's a real pleasure to speak to you, so thank you very
Good.
Much.
Good, Graham, nice to speak to you.
I remember understanding and having read your autobiography, Always Managing, that
you began to understand you were a very talented player, and that clubs began to queue up to sign you, and that more or less you had your pick of the top London clubs.
Yeah, as a schoolboy, yeah, I played for East London Schools, Graham, and sort of 12 years of age, you know, I remember I played at the old Millwall, the old Den. We played, I think it was Wandsworth Boys in the final of a cup competition. I remember walking off the pitch at the end and going down the tunnel at the old Den, and there was this very smart guy, overcoat on, looked like $1 million. His name was, it turned out his name was, he was Dickie Walker. Dickie was a centre-half who played for West Ham for years. A fantastic, a real character. But he left when he finished playing his playing days at West Ham. He didn't get offered a job and he ended up scouting for Tottenham. So he asked me to go to, would I be interested? He said, to me, is your dad here tonight? And I said, yeah, my dad's here. He said, I'm Dickie Walker, Tottenham scout. I said, oh, hello. He said, can I wait after meet you with your dad? I said, yeah, sure. So I can't wait to get changed. And he goes over and introduces himself to my dad and invites us down to Tottenham to meet the great Bill Nicholson, who was, you know, I mean, Tottenham were a fantastic team. And so we go down, we get on the bus, get on the train, me and my dad, and Dickie meets us at White Hart Lane Station and takes us down to the ground. And we meet the great Bill Nick. And he said to me, hello, son. He said, Dickie tells me you play wide right. I said, yeah. He said, do you score goals? I said, not really, Mr. Nicholson. He said, well, I only know one good wide right player who didn't score goals, and that was Stanley Matthews. He said, I don't think you're going to be as good as him, are you? I said, I don't think so, Mr. Nicholson. He was right. And that was Bill Nick. He was a man of few words, you know, but I spent the first couple of years training at Tottenham and used to go there during the school holidays, Tuesday and Thursday night. But during the school holidays, I'd go there and spend 6 weeks there training with the kids, and we'd be able to see Dave Mackay, John White, Danny Blanchflower, all the great players. They'd be, and it was fantastic, you know.
You mentioned a name there that I grew up hearing about all the time. People who hear my accent might think it's Dave Mackay, but everybody who I ever listened to, and I never saw him play on television because he died young, was John White.
John White, fantastic.
People said he was an outstanding footballer.
John White was an amazing player. He married Harry Evans, his daughter. Harry Evans was the assistant manager of Tottenham, was a lovely man, and John White came from Falkirk, was in the army, I think, and joined, he was at Falkirk and signed for Tottenham. He was amazing. And during the breaks, during the when I used to go there as a kid and train, Dave Mackay, they'd say, John, show us a few tricks. And we'd all sit round, all us kids, and we'd be sitting there having that little bit of dinner, you know. And John White would get the ball out. He could do anything. He was a magician with a football. But even just juggling with the ball, he could make the, he was a master of the football. But his passing when he played, he glided around the pitch. He seemed to skim over the surface somehow, you know. And Harry Evans gave me a pair of John's boots, John White's boots, and the silliest thing I've ever done as a boy at school, you know, when we played, he didn't have any boots at one time, and I let him have the boots. I wanted him to play in the school team, and anyway, I never saw the boots again, but they were John's boots, and he was an amazing footballer.
People have said that as much as he was an amazing footballer, he was also a charmer. He had a certain reputation of being attractive to ladies and living well off the pitch, but that was kind of...
Yeah, I didn't...
That was life in them days.
Yeah, then. I didn't know that. I wouldn't have known that, Graham. I know he married Harry Evans' daughter. The whole Tottenham team, that Tottenham team, you know, I would think Dave Mackay was probably the best player ever to play for Tottenham. That seems to be...
Ever?
Ever. I would think he's the best ever Tottenham player.
Tell me why.
Dave Mackay had everything. He was incredible, unbelievable competitor, could play, could pass it, would go through a brick wall. I still think the best picture probably you've ever seen is the one with him and Billy Bremner, where he's lifting Billy up and Billy's looking at him, and Billy Bremner was a great player as well, but Dave Mackay's got Billy Bremner off the floor lifting him up by his shirt, you know. Dave was a colossus. He was like two men. I used to go and watch the European games in them days as a kid at White Hart Lane, and Dave Mackay would just go through tackles. He'd hit passes, he'd hit shots. He could do everything. He was just incredible.
This isn't a direct comparison, but the other guy who stands out in descriptions like that I never saw was Duncan Edwards. That when people speak about this extraordinary ability to do everything on the pitch, to be quicker, to lead, to win the ball, to use the ball... Are there any comparisons there?
They would be very similar. I mean, I saw Duncan Edwards' last game. His last game was in England. His last game was at Arsenal for Man United. I was 10 and I was there. I went with my dad and they beat Arsenal 5-4 that day. It was an incredible game. And Duncan Edwards was just, I mean, if you read Bobby Charlton's book, he said he thought he could, Bobby Charlton was another great player. Bobby Charlton said, I thought I could play until I saw Duncan. He was that good. He was on another level to anybody else. When you think he was 18, 19 in the full England team. He used to play in midfield. He could play at the back. He could just do everything, you know. He'd have been a very similar type to Dave McKay.
In your time as a football admirer, a football player, football coach, have you seen other players in Britain or around the world who compared to those two in the stature? In terms of what you're saying, they made your jaw drop, they made Bobby Charlton's jaw drop with overall ability, presence, skill, goals, leadership. Are we talking about players like Matthias Sammer or Franz Beckenbauer? Or who are we talking
about?
Yeah,
you're talking about the great players. I mean, now what Duncan Edwards would have achieved, no one would ever know, you know, because obviously he never had time to. He'd have gone on, obviously, to 100 caps for England, I'm sure of that. He was already the best player in the team at 18, 19. So he'd have just gone on for the next amount of years and played for England. But he wasn't the only one in that team. It was a team full of young, fantastic young players. Coleman, Roger Byrne, Tommy Taylor. They were just an incredible... the Busby Babes were an incredible team that got wiped out, obviously. But, he'd have been up there with the best. Dave McKay, I mean, he, even at the end of his career, he goes to Derby County and they win a championship. I mean, he was, you know, he went and played at the back. Cluffy took him and played at the back in that team. No, he was an amazing player. And Spurs have had some great players. I mean, you know, when I say I think he's the best player ever, you've got Gareth Bale, you've got Glenn Hoddle, you've got these people. You know, there's been some great players. But I think when Greavesy says that McKay was the best player ever, I think you've got to listen to Jimmy as well.
Jimmy has unfortunately been unwell recently and is another in the line of players who I think aren't probably rewarded or loved by the clubs that they served so well once they get older. And I think that before I come back to Jimmy, because I want to ask you about a comparison between Jimmy Greaves' finishing and the way that Leo Messi finishes, not identical footballers, but that extraordinary ability to put the ball where they want, where the goalkeeper doesn't want it to go. There's another guy who I know you passionately felt was let down by his club in Bobby Moore, and that you often, in later years, found Bobby having difficulty getting into West Ham to do his job as a journalist. He wasn't properly looked after. For those people who don't know that story or don't know about how great Bobby was and then maybe how poorly West Ham treated him up until that a little bit.
Yeah, no, I mean, Bobby was, you know, I was a great friends with Bob and, you know, I remember going, I just went back to West Ham to watch a game. I was out in America playing. I came back home and Bobby was at the game. I can't remember exactly who they played that day. I think it was a championship game, or in them days it was a second division, as it was known. So it wasn't a full house there. It was 20-odd thousand. The stadium held 40. And I came in and sat down, and I went and sat next to Frank Lampard Jr.'s grandmother, or Frank Lampard Sr.'s mum. And Frank Sr. was playing for West Ham that day, and I went and sat next to her, and suddenly I heard behind me, Harry, I looked up about 15 minutes into the game, looked around, it was Bobby, load of empty seats everywhere. We were up in the cheap seats, really, sitting out the way, and there was Bobby behind. So I said, I'll see you after, I have a cup of tea. And suddenly, about 10 minutes later, I can hear people looking round, and there's a steward has come over, and he said, I'm terribly sorry, Bobby, it's not me, he said, but I've been told that... you're not allowed in without a ticket. And Bobby said, oh, okay. Because Bobby used to come in, and he'd turn up 10 minutes after kickoff, and there was a little gate there, and he'd come in and just go and sit up in the back, in
just
the corner. Sit in the back row, sitting in the cheap, up by the corner almost, you know, the block that was always only half full. And he sat there, and suddenly the steward says, well, you're not allowed in without a ticket. And Bobby left and half-time. And he never went back again to West Ham. I thought, you know, but he should have been sitting in the front row of the director's box. He should have been a director to start with, if that had any sense. He'd have been the greatest ambassador the football club could ever have had. He's the greatest player that's ever played for the club, the captain of the club, World Cup winning captain. They could have used him. What a, ambassador when they were trying to sign young kids to take him along, and like Beckenbauer did at Bayern Munich for years or whatever, and like Bobby Charlton's an ambassador at Man United. Bobby should have been used at West Ham in the correct way and treated with the respect that he deserved.
As I've said to you, we're both here because of your talent and achievements and because of my love for football, and you love it despite sometimes its ugliness. Have you ever found an explanation about why it is a great like Bobby and repeatedly other greats seem sometimes to be forgotten or underappreciated, yeah, particularly when they need it most in life?
I think they're not wanted, in lots of cases, Graham, I think they're not wanted by the new people coming to the club. You often see them take pictures down off the wall of ex-players or ex-managers. It's like, oh, they don't want to know about the past. This is just, we are now. And you find that in a lot of clubs. I've found it over the years. There's lots of clubs that are great to the ex-players and still, you know, make them welcome. Everton have got a fantastic Bill Kenwright there. You know, the old players, if any of them need a... You know, I'm good friends with Dave Thomas. Or one, if they need a hip replacement or they need... They have functions, they have dinners, and they'll pay for that and they'll get them private health care, you know, if they can't afford to get it done. And they look after the old players. There's lots of clubs don't want to know the old players. They're not welcome. It's amazing, but that's how it is, unfortunately.
One of the things that I've always admired about you and got brought out a lot in the book was that you have a fabulous eye for a footballer. Not just necessarily a youth footballer or a raw footballer, but you're always willing to put a premium on ability above what other people might say. An example that I'll go to immediately is putting your faith in Paulo Di Canio, you know, a maverick character who'd been banned for pushing over a referee, but for you, the talent was the important thing, which I think, I mean, there's multiple examples, but I think we could talk about, you know, building a team with Cano and Merson and winning trophies there. Tell me about your appreciation, like starting with Paulo. What made you make the decision, and what in general makes you think, I'll put talent ahead of whatever anybody else tells me?
Well, I just think, you know, he was a special player, you know, and I used to watch him play at Sheffield Wednesday. I watched him at Celtic. And I just felt, I've never seen, when he was at Celtic, he was like a little kid in the playground. He was taking corners, throw-ins, whoever the ball, he wanted to do everything. He just wanted to win. And so when the opportunity came to bring it to West Ham, it was too good to miss. And people at the time wrote that I was walking a tightrope without a safety net under me by signing Di Canio. And, you know, people, newspaper men said it was, what a chance I was taking. He was going to, you know, finish me. But he was fantastic. He was amazing. The fans at West Ham absolutely loved him. There was up days, there was down days with him. He wasn't always easy to manage, but I mean, I look back, I laugh at this. We had some great times.
Yeah, but you look back at it now because it was a success, and he scored the all-time goal of the Premier League there. He raised expectations at the crowd. I think in the training field, he showed what a good pro he was. But it's in the moment of taking the risk that I think some of your talents shine out, that you will say, I'm willing to back talent and creativity over potential risk.
But yeah, but I think you have to, Graham. Sometimes I watched a game last night on TV. I'm watching Aston Villa play Birmingham. The first half was dire. It was dire. I'm watching it, I'm thinking, look at this. Suddenly they bring a kid on, Grealish. And this kid is floating over the pitch. He's beating players. He's doing drag backs. He's playing passes. He just lit the game up. But then suddenly you sit and think, oh, I'm watching this kid. I thought, what a talent. Whether he'll go on to be what he should be, but my God, he just changed the whole football match when he walked onto the pitch. It was amazing to watch. I love people that can play. We can go over the park on Sunday and watch a load of blokes running around, tackling, booting the ball up the pitch and chasing it. You know, I want to see someone who can do something. People want to see people do stuff that they can't. You know, where are the great wingers? Where's the Jimmy Johnsons? Where's the Wee Willie Hendersons? Where's the David Coopers, you know, that used to come down from Scotland, you know, played in Scotland? Where's the great dribblers? Where are they gone? People now, one against one. How many people can beat anybody? That's why you put you watch Messi play, it's just incredible to watch. He does things that it's just incredible. And I love watching people that can do stuff, that can beat people, that can dribble and do something that the average man in the street or the average Sunday morning player can't do.
I feel that change, I think, began in the middle 70s as you were moving from being a successful player at West Ham, a winger, into management. The ones I admired who got me excited at the time were
players like Duncan McKenzie, Peter Barnes, Frank Worthington. Alan Hudson was a different style of player.
Yeah, he was a fantastic.
But they were being ignored then, Harry.
I know.
Even then.
Tony Curry. Alan Hudson. So, Peter Osgood. They should. How many caps should they have had, really? You know, fantastic players. Gunter Netzer, you know, who plays for Germany. You see Tony Curry play, you see Hudson play. You know, they're up there.
They're as good.
As good.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Transform your home in one weekend and get big savings on everything for your project at Menards. Menards carries the largest selection of Purdy painting tools you need to get your painting project started. From brushes, paint, roller covers, and even paint kits. Hurry in and save big money on Purdy painting supplies. Get everything you need for your painting project at Menards. Plus, check out Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
What is it in the British nature, the English nature, given that you named half a dozen brilliant Scottish wingers there, and Charlie Cook, I want to throw
cool,
in too.
Charlie Cook, fantastic.
Aberdeen legend.
Fantastic dribbler. Incredible. Roll the ball to you, people got to swipe it away and drag it back and drift away with it, you know.
Got changed at Chelsea on his first day, keeping the ball up the whole time. He could change it out of his clothes and into his kit.
Fantastic.
Just to say, Charlie's here. What is it in our English character then that started to squeeze those talented players out by not picking them for England, by not developing footballers like them? And any clue why you when you
well, coaching? I think coaching. We suddenly became very functional, didn't we? You know, I used to go on managers' courses at that time, and teams like Wimbledon were being successful, and you know, and Watford were being successful. And suddenly, you know, when you went there, and Charles Hughes would be talking, and he would talk about the Pomo ball, and goals were scored by three passes or less, or you know, whatever. It suddenly became a game that. It was a long ball game. Suddenly, you know, you're going to keep getting it, whacking out. People that wanted to play and could play were being... I could imagine Messi in them days turning up at a football club, having coaches look at him, and they didn't know, and they go, nah, he's got no chance. Look at his chance he got, you know, little skinny thing, little feet like, you know. And then he'd have probably beat about four, but then they'd have gone, nah, he couldn't do that. Yeah, try doing that up somewhere up north on a cold, wet night. You know, that was the attitude, wasn't it? I had Robert Prosinecki, and I had a coach at Portsmouth saying, lazy, look at it. So I watched him play. I'd have paid... It was just incredible to watch the man play. He was a genius. Yet there's people at the club didn't have any time for him, basically.
Robert was a joy to watch, and he was a bit scruffy, and he'd nick about with a cigarette hanging out
his
mouth or whatever, but...
God, what a player.
But handicapped, but he could play.
Play.
So when you sit and talk to me about having to listen to the Pomo merchants and watch it become fashionable, Did that enrage you? How did you?
Because kept trying to play. My first managerial job, the first success I had really, was at Bournemouth. You know, at Bournemouth, we won the third. Bournemouth had never been out at that time, never been out the third or fourth division. They'd never got into the second division or the first division as it was then. Now the Premier or Championship, as it is now called. So in 100-odd years of their history, they'd never been at the bottom two divisions, third or fourth division. When I was here, I came here with David Webb, we got out the fourth division, and then we didn't have much of a team. We were struggling. But I ended up putting a team together, and I played with two out-and-out, two wingers, home and away, two little wingers, a little boy called Richard Cook, and a little left-winger called Mark O'Connor, who works with Tony Pulis. He's been everywhere with Tony. Wherever Tony's been, he's been on his coaching staff. But they were that big, the pair of them. And I played with two strike. I played 4-4-2 home and away, and we absolutely smashed the league up, you know. But we played. We passed the ball, we murdered teams, and we ripped the division to pieces, you know, by playing football. People always said, you can't play your way out of that division. Well, we did. You know, we played from start to finish, and we were great. I go and watch Bournemouth now. I love watching them play, Graham. The football is incredible. It's unbelievable. The last year and the year before in Division One and then the Championship, the football they played was mind-blowing.
Now, Eddie played for you, didn't he?
Eddie played. I signed Eddie as a player. I took him to Portsmouth. Eddie was a real good player. Read the game, played at the back. It'd have been without... There was only one Bobby Moore, and Eddie wasn't Bobby Moore, because Eddie could... He read the game. He was only 5'10", 5'11", maximum centre-half. But he just read the game. Pass it, drop off, read it, people flicking balls on. Eddie was always in the right position. Not great pace. A really good footballer. Really good, intelligent player.
One of the things about being clever about signing players is being alert to opportunities, and I was stunned because you built the Bournemouth side. They not only got promoted, but not Manchester United out of the cup, which was, I remember, was earth-shattering.
That was the year before, actually, we built a decent team. That team, every player in that team actually, I think, got a free transfer at the end of the year. But for some reason on that day, we turned in an amazing performance. But the following year was when we built a team that actually got us out of the league. A new team.
Just recall to me then, that one of the stories which shocked me most in the book was about Mark Newson.
Mark Newson, yeah.
And benching him from under the nose of Barry Fry.
Yeah, yeah.
They got quite annoyed about it.
Yeah, yeah, Barry did. My chief scout at Bournemouth at the time was a boy called Stuart Morgan. He knew that non-league better than anybody. When he was an ex-manager of Weymouth and Dorchester. And when he was manager of Weymouth, he signed people like Graham Roberts, Tony Agana, Andy Townsend, Sean Till, all went on to play in, you know, obviously in the top division, all really. He had a great eye for a player, Stuart, and he worked for me at Bournemouth as my chief scout. And he came to me one day, he said, Harry, is a boy at Maidstone. He said, Mark Newson. He said, he's different class. Absolutely different class. He said, he should be playing way higher, playing non-league football. I said, well, what's the situation with him? He said, well, I don't know, I think he'd probably be about 40 grand. I don't know if we can afford it, but I'm telling you, he'd be a real good buy, you know. We might get him for a bit less. Anyway, a couple of days later, Stuart comes in, he said, oh, I can't believe it. I said, what's happened? He said, he's gone to Tottenham. Mark Newson, the boy at Maidstone. Because we was on it then, trying to do something. You know, I said, look, I'll go and watch him next Tuesday. He had a game or something the following week, and we'll go and watch him at Maidstone or wherever. I said, I'll come and have a look at him. He said, it's too late, he's gone to Tottenham. Anyway, come back. He said, no, he's only gone for a week. They've took him for a week on a week's trial. Right, he says, he's playing tomorrow in Tottenham's reserves. He said, they won't let you in, your manager, they won't let you in. He said, but I'll get in. He said, it's behind closed doors thing. He said, but they're letting some scouts in, but I don't think they'll have managers there. But he said, look, I'll go and watch the game. Anyway, come back. He said, he was the best player on the pitch. He said, they've got no chance. He said, Tottenham will buy him. He said, he was different class. Anyway, that night I get a phone call from a fella called Bill Williams. Bill was an ex-centre-half for Gillingham who went to America. Now, when I was out in America, Bill was at a club that folded up, and we did him a favour, Bill, and we helped his club out a little bit, and one thing or another when I was at Seattle. Anyway, Bill rings me up. He's the secretary of Maidstone. So he says, Harry, he said, hello, Bill. I said, how you doing? He'd been, you know, played at the same time as me, big centre-half. He said, all right. He said, are you after Mark Newson? I said, yeah, but it looks like he's going to Tottenham, doesn't it? I said, he's been at Spurs yesterday or today and played well in their reserves. He said, I'm just marking your card. He said, he's not on a contract. He said, his contract is in the drawer. He said, he's on the dole. So he says, he's a non-contract player. He can go anywhere. He said, he's not registered. He's on like a week to week, you know. I said, you sure? He said, yeah. Anyway, look, here's his phone number. If you want to give him a ring, he said, you might be able to do something. He said, but don't do anything till tomorrow morning. He said, because I'm going to South Africa to live with my daughter. If they find out Barry Fry, he said, they'll shoot me. He said, they'll be round. He said, my life would be misery. He said, don't. So give me time. The mate won't get on the plane to South Africa. He said, don't tell him anyway who's told you. I said, no, don't worry, Bill. So next day, I ring Mark Newson up. Or that night, sorry, I ring him. Late at night. Mark, I said, look, you know, well, he said, I'm at Tottenham, Harry, you know. He said, I think they might sign me. I said, look, just come down and have a chat with me. He said, well, we've got a day off tomorrow. He said, because we had a reserve game this morning. I played at Tottenham. He said, I'll be off tomorrow. So I said, well, jump on the train. We'll pay your fare. Come and talk to us. So he jumped on the train, come down. When we took him to a little Italian restaurant, I said, look, Mark. He said, but Tottenham, I think Tottenham are going to take me, Harry. You know, I said, but look, you ain't going to play there, Mark. I said, you're going to come here and play. You ain't got a job. You're on the dole. You need to work. Come here and play for me. I said, we'll give you 200 quid a week or whatever it was at the time. Anyway, I wouldn't let him go till he signed. So in the end, he agreed he's going to sign. He didn't ask about the fee or anything. He agreed to sign. So I ring. Is that doing your recording in? I lock him in, Lev Newson says.
It's maybe me.
So I signed Mark Newson, and so I ring Barry. Got to ring Barry Fry now to give him the good news, right? So I ring Mr. Young first of all at the FA, and I said, Mr. Young, I said, have you got a Mark Newson registered from Maidstone? No, Harry. He said, no, Mark Newson, no. He said, no, he's not on a contract. I said, what does that mean? He said, well, it means he's not on a contract. He said, he's free. At this time of year, he can sign up for anybody. He said, he's a free agent. Okay, thank you very much. I just wanted to confirm it, you know. So anyway, we signed Mark. I ring Barry up. Barry, I said, is Harry Redknapp? Hello, H, how you going, son? He said, all right. Going all right. I said, yeah, going all right, Barry. I said, listen, I've just signed Mark Newson. He said, no, I know you've been interested. He said, but he's going to Tottenham. He said, it'd be 200 grand, he said, and plus some add-ons, you know, on appearances and that. I said, no, I've signed him. He said, what do you mean you've signed him? Haven't you signed him? We ain't agreed a fee and we're going to get 200 grand from Tottenham up front. I said, no, but I've signed him. I said, he was a free agent, so he now belongs to Bournemouth. I said, he wasn't on a contract, Barry. I said, so should have had him on a contract, really. He said, you bastard. He said, I tell you now, Redknapp, he said, you've had it. I went, unlucky, Barry. I said, you should have had him on a contract. Put the phone down.
Unlucky.
5 minutes later, the phone goes. It's his chairman. What was his name? Oh, chairman. He was also the chairman of the league of the Vauxhall Conference. Anyway, he rings up. Jim, suddenly, anyway, the guy rings me up. Harry said, I'm so sorry that Barry has spoke to you like that. I really do apologise. We don't do things like that at Maidstone United Football Club. He said, he's out of order and please accept my apologies. He said, but look, OK, we made a mistake. You're being very clever. He said, but let's come to a gentleman's agreement here and let's sort the fee out now. And let's all, you know, get it sorted. I said, I'm sorry, Jim, there is no fee. I said, he wasn't on a contract, and we've signed him. He said, you dirty bastard, he said to me. And he started saying he was worse than Barry, what he was going to do to me. I went, sorry, Jim, unlucky, you should have had him on a contract. Put the phone down. Next day, there's three of them. I'm in the office, me and Brian Tyler. Brian was my pal. Brian got killed in 1990 when we was out in the World Cup in Italy. I was in accident with him, but Brian was the chief executive. He was the ex-captain of Aston Villa. He was a great fella. So me and Brian's in, suddenly the secretary's, Harry, there's three fellas just turned up from Maidstone United. I said, no, really? She said, yeah. Barry Fry, the chairman, there's another great big bloke with him. Right, and brought some big geezer with him. Me and Bryce shot across the pitch.
I said, get our cars, get someone to drive our car around the other way. About 3 o'clock in the afternoon it was, me and Brian, I drove the car around and we legged it away, me and Brian, left them roasting.
People don't know the perils of signing cleverly, do they? The risks you take.
So that was that one. Anyway, he came and played. He was my captain when we won the league that year. And we ended up selling it to Fulham, I think, for £300,000 or something, about 4 years later.
You consistently do this because you pick players who you think are going to be good for the team, but entertain the fans, who'll help you win, and who you then go on and make your club a profit on.
Yes.
Crouchy would be an example, wouldn't he?
Yeah, Crouchy was, yeah, we bought Crouchy. Crouchy, when he came to Portsmouth. But Crouchy was a good signing. But I've had some funny ones over the years. You know, I took a boy called Cole Richards from non-league, from Enfield. He was playing for the England non-league team against Wales at Nuneaton. So it was bank holiday Monday, and Sandra sent me, it was a lovely day. She said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to Nuneaton. She said, oh, it's a lovely day. You've got to go there for. So I'm looking at a player there, and up front he played. Anyway, he could run, and he's a powerful boy. After the game, I'm waiting by, they've got a little thing after the England and Welsh team. They're going into this little hut for, like, obviously, you know, have a few speeches and a cake, bit of sandwich and a cup of tea and give out some trophies or whatever. I'm hiding behind this shed, right? I'm the manager of Bournemouth. I'm waiting for this Cole Richards. Now, he's at Enfield. He's on a contract. He is on a contract. I'm waiting. Suddenly, he comes along. Cole. He looked at me. He was about 6'3", right? Looked like Cole Lewis, sprinter, a great big lad. He went, what? I said, have you got a minute? He went, what do you want? So he comes over, he's got the walk on him, you know. What do you want? I said, I'm Harry Redknapp, manager of Bournemouth. He went, Bournemouth? I said, I've never heard of you, never heard of them. He went, what league are you in? I said, Division 2. Division 3. It's third division. Division 3. He said, what, in the Isthmian? I went, no, football league. He said, I've never heard of Bournemouth. I went, anyway, I said, well, we are in the league, Cole. He said, are you full-time professionals? I said, yeah. He said, I've always wanted to be a full-time professional. I went, well, that's what we are. That's what we are. I said, I'm interested in buying you. He said, yeah, I'd like that. Sorry, I better go and see what there's someone out there. They wouldn't be barking.
I'm telling you, they've detected there's a Scotsman in the house.
So I end up signing. Anyway, I go down to Enfield on the Monday to speak to Eddie McCluskey, the manager. £10,000 we're going to pay for Cole. I get there and he's with a mate of his who played in the same team. So Eddie McCluskey calls Carl in to talk to him. He's just got his mate, his best pal, who's another striker. When he goes in, his mate said to me, you're signing the wrong man, Harry. So I'm 10 times better than him. He said, I've scored 26 goals this year. He's only got 14. I thought, what have I done? I've got the wrong man. Anyway, we end up signing Cole, but he came down pre-season. He had the worst 5 games I've ever seen pre-season ever. And he knocks on my door and he says, you've done me up on my contract, Harry. I said, why? He said, well, you told me I was getting £200 a week. He said, I've only got 130 or whatever. I said, well, that's income tax, Cole. He looked at me. He said, well, you didn't tell me about this income tax. I went, well, everybody pays income tax, Cole. It's the law of the land. He went, I've never paid it before. I said, well, where you been working? He said, well, I said, what did you do for a living? Well, I never had a job. But since, he's 27. I said, well, since you left school, you never had a job. No, he said, but I worked with my mate 1 week. He said, I'd done a bit of painting and decorating. He gave me £100 cash. He said, I don't know anything about this income tax. Eventually, we get sorted out, and he done great for me, and I end up selling to Birmingham for £85,000. We give £10,000, and he was great.
He probably thinks income tax only exists in Bournemouth.
Yeah,
and his mate Harry.
I don't know.
I say sympathetically.
His mate. I know his mate. No, he never made it. I think he went back. He was an army boy, actually. I think he got called up again somewhere and disappeared at the wherever the British Army were at the time.
And Carl, did Carl recommend?
Yeah.
Ian Wright?
Yeah. Because after about 5 games, Cole came to me and said, and he was so bad, it was, I've never seen anything like it. Pre-season, we won the league that year. We got beat at Weymouth, Dorchester, Bath and Yeovil. And then he says, we're playing Crystal. He went to me, come on, mate, have a trial. I said,
Where's he play, Cole? He said, he's a striker, same as me. I said, is he better than you, Cole? He said, no, he's not as good as me. I said, well, tell him not to effing bother. And that was it. On the Saturday, following Saturday, we went to Crystal Palace, and he went, my mate's playing today, the one I told you about, wanted a trial. I said, what, for Palace? He said, yeah. I said, well, we won't have to worry about him too much then, will we? And after he got his third goal, I realised Ian Wright was better than Cole. And I couldn't tell you what I said to Carl after the game.
But I asked that with sympathy, because it's a shark-infested game trying to pick a player. And that's why I was expressing my admiration, because you look for talent, you take risks, and you're going to win or lose. You can't win all the time.
No, of course not. I used to travel everywhere. In them days when I was at Bournemouth, Graham, I mean, you know, every night I would get in that car, and I had a little old car, but I would slap everywhere. You know, I remember going down to watch Tony Pulis play. I'm going to sign, he's at Newport County. And getting all the way down there, rained all the way. I thought, is the game on? Is it off? It was games getting called off everywhere. The roads were flooded. And I finally get there, 20 past seven, and I walk in this little hut and have a cup of tea with the other scouts. And who's sitting in there is Tony Pulis having a cup of tea. I've gone all the way to watch him. So I end up tapping him up instead, you know. And so I said, would you be interested in coming to Bournemouth? He said, yeah, I'd love to, you know. Took him out on a free. They wanted to get rid of him. I don't think the manager wanted him out. Colin, I think it might have been Colin Addison at the time or someone. Colin, they wanted to get rid of him, so I took him on a free. But I was every night I was somewhere watching games.
You'd be proud of maybe David Moyes in that case, because it was one of the things that David, I think, did at Everton successfully. He's doing it in Spain at the moment. The more work you put in, even if you're driving overnight, you work harder than the next guy, and you spot the right talent, don't you? The more work you put in, the luckier you get in signing.
It must be hard for David over there, I suppose. You know, getting to know them, everybody is a new start, isn't it?
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.